Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, social critic, and mentor, navigating the messy art of living and the complex beauty of relationships through these conversations that we need to have but often shy away from. It's another Tuesday, Elizabeth. Where are we off to today?
Well, we are traveling two roads at the same time today, Donna. We are going to explore this idea that two things can be true at the same time. Two opposite things can be true at the same time. For example, I can be incredibly efficient at all of my jobs as a teacher or as a wife or as a mother or as a radio host, but I can also be struggling with sadness or despair or frustration or anger at the same time. And I think we all have to traverse those two different worlds off in our life, especially if you have responsibilities like being a mother or a wife or a father or an employee. You have people that are waiting for you and looking up to you and depending on you to come through with certain tasks. And so those jobs, that world continues to hum, even if the other part of our world is really starting to tank, whether it's love relationships or disappointments or grief, loss, transitions, whatever those things are. We find ourselves throughout many times in our life having these two worlds not sync up at all. But having said that, how phenomenal is it when the two worlds do sync up and two things are actually true at the same time, that I feel like I'm functioning well and I'm efficient at my job and that people can depend on me and I feel really good about myself and I feel strong and powerful and confident and ready to take on the world? That is a mighty place to be. And I feel like I'm in that place right now in this moment, if I were going to do a little internal landscape check-in. But, you know, check back with me in an hour and maybe those two things will shift. But it's so important to be able to hold those two things at the same time in our life. Because the danger is if we get too wrapped around the part of our life which feels like despair or anger or frustration or loss, if we wrap ourselves around those feelings, we squeeze out a lot of space in our ability to do the other pieces of our life, which might include being present and loving and caretaking and kind and friendly towards the people that matter in our life and just people in general. And that's something that we really need to be aware of. If we're feeling like we're on the edge of blowing all the time, it's probably because we've wrapped ourselves so tightly around this one lens through which we're seeing the world. We've forgotten that at the same moment, there's also beauty everywhere around us. We've just lost our capacity to take that part of our life in. And so part of our work as expanding human beings is to be able to recognize that when we feel wrapped around really negative, challenging, upsetting emotions or experiences, to find a moment to catch our breath, and the good kind of breath, not the kind where you go and everyone says, take a deep breath, and then you've shocked your whole system. A deep, aggressive breath is never helpful. What I'm talking about is taking a moment to find your breath, just that simple tuning in to the inhalations and exhalations, and close your eyes, and then imagine or visualize those things that you love. Because no matter how cranky we are, there are always things that we love. And it may be reduced down to a cup of coffee, right? But there always are things that we love. And on the good days, it's my husband and my kids and my cats and my friends and my neighbors. Like, the expansiveness of all the things that I love is ginormous. And so when we get wrapped around those feelings of wanting to blow up at every person whenever they come near us, or feeling like we don't want to leave our house because everything's so awful, to settle into our body, to find that breath, and then visualize that which we love. And when we start to visualize that which we love, it starts to lighten things up and make space in our psyche for new experiences. Doesn't mean we have to give up all the hate talk, right? Doesn't mean we have to give up all the ways that we're angry. It's still going to be there, but we can squeeze it over and make room for the other things to be true at the same time. So That's where my brain is going today. Where my heart is going today is the joy I'm feeling sitting next to one of my former students who has traveled an incredibly interesting journey since the time we knew each other. I want to say 10 years ago, maybe 11 or 12. It's been a while. She's a glorious woman now and left as a kind of uncertain undergrad, if I can say. But she's also an author, an Instagram storyteller. I refuse to say influencer because that feels so cheap, but more of a rich storyteller sharing her wit and her humor and chronicling her life and garnishing almost a million fans across social media. It's just so exciting. It's so exciting as an educator to see where students that you had developed a relationship with end up in their life. Because also, as much as I've loved all of my students over 15 years, you don't connect deeply with all of them. There are those few that kind of stand out. And my guest today, Devrie Bryn Donaldson, is one of those students. And so I'm really excited to have her here to talk about where her life took her post-graduation and where she is today and how she's balancing her two worlds, whatever those two worlds look like. And maybe there are four or five. So that's where we're going today. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're welcome to be part of the conversation by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. Or you can find me after the show, send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also follow us on Instagram or Facebook and leave me a message there. I'm happy to respond. I think a lovely picture of Devrie in my Instagram today. And you can also listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org. Go under the News Talk tab and all of the shows are there. Or if you'd like to stay a little more current, you can podcast the show wherever it is that you get your podcasts, except for Spotify. We're working on Spotify. Can't quite figure out why we're not there yet, but that's another story. But everywhere else you find podcasts, just search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and the show will be there for you to listen at your convenience. So I think that's it for now. We're going to take a quick break and come back and begin our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And Devrie Bryn Donaldson, thank you for being my guest on the show today.
Oh my gosh, hey, Professor Barrett. It's been a minute.
I know. Well, actually, what year did you graduate? Let's date ourselves here.
2014, so yeah.
Been 10 years. Well,
11 in June. I don't know. Whatever. Time's not real.
That is a whole nother conversation for sure. But it really is. It's completely exciting to have you here. And I'm going to read a little because at this point you've garnered so many followers and fans and you have, your own story. So I'm going to share it a little bit for people who might not be aware of who you are. My guest today is Devrie Bryn Donaldson. She's a storyteller, speaker, performer, media fast talker, which is so true. And if you get a chance to find Devrie Bryn online, please do. And it's just at Devery Brin.
Yeah, just at Devery Brin, and on across all channels.
Yes. And you have to have the volume on because yeah. that makes it. But yeah, all of your stories, they are authentic tales from your life. You're not putting on a show. Well, you're putting on a show, but really pulling it from your life that they are equal parts heart and humor, because mm-hmm. any good thing that makes us laugh also tugs at the parts of us that bring up a lot of pain and memories. As I mentioned, you have close to 1 million online followers across your social media, chronicling your pursuit of a life well lived, which I love that you're using it, because I hope that you pulled that from one of the many quotes of Waldo Emerson that I use in class about a life well lived. And then in 23, you published your first book of essays and poetry, You're Gonna Die Alone, and Other Excellent News. Mm-hmm. And you sent me a copy, and that's how we reconnected. And I just couldn't be more proud of you. So yay.
Yay. Thank you so much. That's so meaningful. Obviously, I sent you a copy because of all the professors that I had in college, you are the one that stuck out. And I took every class that you offered. And I learned, honestly, I still tell people to this day, you know, my undergrad is in therapeutic psychology, but really it was like how to live a better life is what the skills that we gleaned from taking those courses, particularly with you. So this is a thrill.
Yay. All right. So let's catch up mm-hmm. since that's what we're here to do today. What happened? You went to Poly as a psych major.
I did.
What was your goal going into school? Because everyone's supposed to have that goal.
Oh, and I did. When I was coming into school, my goal was to be a therapist for kids, teenagers, that sort of thing, particularly those who had been affected by addiction, which was a parallel to my life and a very classic maneuver for mm-hmm. me at that age to say, here's a thing that I went through and I will immediately synthesize it into a solution mm-hmm. I can pursue and achieve.
Yes.
Check. I'm good.
Yes. And once I am doing this work, it'll remove all the pain I feel from my own experience
sure.
and I will just make it better for others, mm-hmm. which is a classic path for a lot of psychotherapists.
Yeah, that was the goal.
Okay.
Things changed.
So what changed?
Yeah, well, when I first came in, mm-hmm. I was from sort of a single-minded area, a one-track mind with sort of a political and religious ideology aligned. I hadn't really been exposed to a lot of other ways of thinking or even people. Mm-hmm. And when I came to Cal Poly and started the psychology track, I knew that it would be harder to get into grad school without some sort of speciality mm-hmm. in that track, particularly in areas of diversity. And I ended up taking women's and genders studies courses. And initially, when I walked in, I was like, feminism isn't real. These people are Looney Tunes.
So that was a really big step for you to step into that department, given your upbringing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Huge, huge. And I went in there just defenses raised. I was not intending on actually learning anything. I was intending on memorizing the answers and writing the papers and, you know, putting the little stamp on my resume and carrying on.
Rolling your eyes.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Professionally. but once I got there, it was sort of an awakening of sorts, just in terms of the people that were taking the classes with me were so kind and compassionate and fierce about defending sort of the underdog in so many situations, which actually lined up more so with the ideology that I'd been preached to about my whole life mm-hmm. than most of the people that I was familiar with. Mm. So that started to kind of put like a fissure in my understanding of the world and where those people were situated in it. And as I continued to take those classes, it became more and more difficult to maintain my worldview. So
that dissonance between the two worlds.
Oh, yeah. The mental
theme
chafe,
of the day. Yeah.
The mental chafe yeah. was strong. Yeah, exactly. Theme of the day of just sort of can both of these things be true at once? Mm-hmm. And the two things that I was holding were sort of, you know, directly opposed in this way that was too much, too uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So then the two things that I had to decide if they could be true at once were, could I have been wrong about so much and still be good or on the right track. Mm-hmm. And trying, I think at some point everybody comes to a decision or a moment where maybe they realize that the things that they've believed and the behaviors that have been a result of that were potentially causing harm when they thought it was doing good. Mm-hmm. And immediately that makes us want to recoil and throw up blocks and say, and back away from mm-hmm. that realization, because it makes us feel like we're bad, and shame is such a thing that you want to hide from. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the kind of big challenges of becoming and growing up, and which continues your whole life, right, is having moments where you can offer yourself forgiveness and compassion and understanding and still hold yourself accountable to what you know now. So that was sort of that first schism that I had to overcome, which continued past college. And
what happened to those relationships, though, with the people that were the original ideology? Mm-hmm. I'm assuming a very Christian background, very yeah. sheltered. What happened in that world was you started to align more with your new worldview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing because growing up in that community, the way that you understand your relation to what you're being taught is very different when you stand on the outside of it looking in. Mm. And so there's some things that you just don't know until you know. Mm-hmm. And once you know it, you can't unknow it. Mm-hmm. Once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. And so when I started to encounter people who were the people that I was told were sinful and were bad and were making willful choices to live in this sinful lifestyle, when I started seeing those people treat me, who was the person with the boot on their neck, with more in line with the character of Jesus of Nazareth mm-hmm. than the people that I was sitting next to 3 days a week at my various church services, that started really putting kind of a splinter in my heart. I'm just one of those people that will chase a lead down, you know? So I had to keep understanding. So I started taking religion courses as well. I took the Christianity course at school, and, you know, which traced the origin all the way through modern interpretations. And the more that I learned, the more that I sort of thought, well, this is good. This is good information. Nobody knows this mm-hmm. at the church, you know? And once they know it,
they would change.
They'll change. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. what happened to those relationships where there were very few that were malleable and built with the sort of like love and compassion that makes something available to change, that came with me, and the rest were unsurprisingly pretty brittle, which was a really tough situation for me because that was my entire community. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of had to make the choice to be the lost gazelle wandering alone. Mm-hmm. And it felt a bit like losing a limb. You mm-hmm. know, it was everything I knew. It was community so important for us, right? All of my friends, it was, and even more so, it was this foundational belief system that I'd built my life on, mm-hmm. made all my choices based on this assumption that certain things were true. And when you accept that the foundation was maybe not solid and there was a crack running through it, it puts all your choices and everything that you've sacrificed and everyone you've hurt and everything that you haven't done into this light of, I didn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. And whoops, and look at the time that's gone by. And that, you know, your mind, your body wants homeostasis, and your mind does too, which is why so much mental gymnastics happens mm-hmm. to make things true that aren't true. And so that was incredibly painful, along with the loss of that community at the same time. But it was less painful than continuing to act out of alignment with what I now understood to be for the good of the many, if that makes sense.
So by the time you graduated, had you then found a new community? You know, were you able to find another space for yourself?
When I graduated, my first kind of bigger job out of college was being a youth pastor.
Oh.
So no.
Okay.
It took until a few years afterwards for that sort of transformation to be complete. Mm-hmm. And when it was shortly after the Supreme Court decision on marriage equality. And that decision came out I watched all of the people I knew in that community react to that, mostly on Facebook, because, you know, we're dating ourselves again, but mostly on Facebook. And the way that they reacted was so out of line with anything you could call loving. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, well, if that's their God, then it's not mine. And it was sort of like, there's a line in The Fault in Our Stars, the John Green book, that says falling in love was like falling asleep slowly and then all at once. And I always feel like falling out of that world was sort of the same. Mm-hmm. It was like a little chip, and then all of a sudden a spiderweb crack, and there was kind of no going back. So at that point, when I kind of hit that wall, it allowed me to zoom out and take a look and say, wow, I have a lot to learn across multiple areas of life. Mm-hmm. And I might not be that rad of a person. I might not be cool to hang out with for a lot of people. And so I typed into Google master's programs on religion, economy, gender, history, politics. I put as many of those words as I could think of. And two programs came up. And one of them was at the University of Glasgow in Scotland. Mm-hmm. It was a master's in sociology of equality and human rights.
Wow.
And I applied that night, got in, quit my job 2 weeks later, packed two suitcases and said, I got a lot to learn. See you later. And headed to Scotland, which was sort of the first step in finding that new community.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Devrie Bryn Donaldson, author, storyteller, Instagram fast talker, or social media fast talker, and also one of my former students, and it's my pleasure to have her here today. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. So you did the master's program. When did you discover your talent for writing and storytelling in the way that you do?
You know what's wild is I had wanted to be a writer when I was very young. And I didn't remember that until after I'd already written this book and gotten a book deal. And we found, when I was cleaning out my grandma's house, she was the sort that printed out emails and filed them.
I love that.
Yeah. So we had files and files and files to go through. And we found she'd printed out emails that my mother had sent from the time that I was 7. And there were maybe 4 or 5 that were essays or writing projects from school that she had sent to the family and been like, look how talented she is. Now, they were wild stories about like the destruction of the dinosaurs and a submarine where we fought a kraken and things of that nature. Honestly, kind of cool. Might remake them into a fantasy epic. Why not?
Yes.
But so that I think that talent was always there. And I always was like a writer, journalist type. I always express myself better in the written word than in person. I'll have a great date with someone, hug them, go home, and then write a text message that's like, I love you. So I always knew that. And I always knew that I liked to tell stories and kind of be, I'm kind of a modern day clown. And that's always been in my DNA to some extent. But in the form of social media, that was an accident. Mm. Essentially, I'd gone on a hike 3 miles and it was 75 degrees outside. I should have known better. And I got really overheated and I almost passed out. And then I got back from the hike and I was really mad. And I just posted a little rant on my Instagram stories to my, you know, couple hundred friends. Mm-hmm. And I had one friend who had fallen down the TikTok rabbit hole early. And she was like, you should post this on TikTok. And I said, well, I don't really know anything about that. I downloaded TikTok the same day that I binge watched all of Tiger King and ate raviolis out of the pot I made them in off of my chest. And so I posted it. You know, my username was XYZH2 whatever. And later I was talking to my Gen Z brother and I was like, oh, I posted on TikTok today. And he was like, oh, sure you did. I said, watch it go viral. And I opened up my phone and it was going viral.
What year is this?
This was 2020.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, because we were in pandemic lockdown.
Yeah. It was June in 2020.
Okay.
And so that first video that I posted, which was just a 60-second little kind of storytelling rant comedy bit, got 9 million views.
Goodness.
And so, yeah. And so 24 hours later, I had 10,000 followers and I had done social media marketing for a stint up in the Bay. And I was like, well, I technically qualify as like the influencer threshold, quote unquote, mm-hmm. Which does create opportunity. And I swear I saw an image in my head, clear as day, mm-hmm. of Arnold Schwarzenegger in just like a sweaty tank top and like just kicking in my door, just brrr, and just going sink or swim. And his tank top just had opportunity written across
wow,
the front.
That's pretty bold.
Yeah, he came to me. Arnold Schwarzenegger yeah. came to me. And I just thought to myself, well,
all in.
Got a swing.
Yeah.
So I just started posting every day and it got more comfortable and more comfortable. And it became fun. And sort of, you know, you get these 60-second sound bites to create something that people connect to. Mm-hmm. And so I just started making everything from the perspective of how do I make somebody feel seen with this or witnessed, mm-hmm. even if it's as simple as, you know, you text it to your sister and you're like, LOL, us. And it's something silly like I would die for cheese, you know, type thing. Or if it's something much more poignant. I've done some of the poetry that's in my book, just reading it sort of out loud first. And it spans the gauntlet. But everybody that follows my page for the most part follows because they found it and said, oh my gosh, you said the words that I think in my head out loud. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I strive for across all mediums.
Well, and that's so funny. I'm realizing as you're speaking that I keep mentioning Instagram because I don't have TikTok or mm-hmm. have any interest in it. But that's really the blow up space yeah. for you. So there's that a whole other world. Mm-hmm. Three worlds can be true.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to share some of the poetry and writings in the book because I just laughed and cried. And again, because I was so proud, but also because it's so wonderful. Let's start with, I think it's time,
yeah.
if you can pull it up, because it's, I think it's a good start for how you got started.
Yeah, it actually is kind of the start. I wrote that poem on the fly as just an Instagram. And it was sort of the launching point for a journey that ended up in this book. So that's why it's the first entry.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's time. I wish my fear of failure was smaller than my fear of a too small life. I admire so greatly the people who try without any guarantee of success. I wasn't born with that bone. I've made myself small. I've corralled myself in trying to control the way that people see me. And the bottom line is this. I never will. People will see me the way that they need to in order to carry on. So I think it's time I stop seeing myself when I look in the mirror as a single pin on a paper map, but rather a galaxy with ever unfurling edges, nothing staring back at me but the potential for vastness, for the unexplored, for the unending. I think it's time to be brave.
So what followed that poem for you? How long is it from that poem to the rest of this book?
So that poem was in 2020. In a really rough spot in my life, a lot of compounding things. It was sort of during that initial lockdown, a lot of kind of monsters came home to roost. And I was in my parents' house at the time. I had just moved home for like a short stint before finding something new when that happened.
Not expecting then that it was going to be okay.
Yeah. And it like recreated some situations from my youth and all of these things kind of came home at once. So that was a really difficult time to navigate, but it gave me the opportunity to sort of meet old ghosts in the rooms that they kind of died in and reckon with those things. And part of that is chronicled in this book, actually a lot of it. And eventually in 2022, I was about to be 30 and I had two really long-term best friends that were like sisters to me. I don't have any sisters. I don't have any girl cousins. And in my family growing up, you know, everybody's family has something. There was addiction and there was mental illness and there were all these things. And my role kind of fell in. I sought a lot of the traditional things that happen in a family from external sources. And so I was really close to my friends and really close to their family. They felt like chosen family to me. Mm-hmm. And as I was about to turn 30, those relationships, both of them fractured. One was sort of expected. One was out of the blue. And it had been some time since I'd been to Scotland. I graduated in 2017 with my master's. And this was 2022. I hadn't lived in Edinburgh. I'd lived in Glasgow. And I just, you know, when I leave my parents' house, no matter which road I take, it goes by one of their childhood homes.
Mm. It's like one of the old friends or ex-friends.
Yeah, it's like everywhere I go, the streets are haunted type thing. And I just wanted to go somewhere where it was just me. Mm. And I remembered the last time I stopped and kind of took a look at things. And I remembered that the last time I really felt like myself was standing under Edinburgh Castle 5 years before. And I thought to myself, well, maybe if I go back there and just wander, I might run into that girl again. Mm. And so I very irresponsibly booked a ticket to Scotland with no real plan on returning. I have a best friend in London, and I was like, worst comes to worst, that's my landing pad. And I posted a really quick video about it on my 30th birthday that was like 9 seconds long. And that was the second video I ever had that got 9 million views.
It resonated clearly with people coming out the pandemic with the same feelings.
People were like, oh, we can do that?
Yeah.
And because it was my birthday, so a bunch of people Venmoed me beer money. Like they were like, have a beer on me. And when I say a bunch, I mean enough to rent an apartment for 6 months Scotland.
That was the universe saying, you're on the right track.
Yeah, it was. And it felt like the first moment of silver lining, but like hope in all of that grief. That was this tidal wave. You know, I couldn't even breathe. My head hadn't even hit the surface of the water yet. Mm-hmm. But there was this moment of like, look what happens. Look what can come through when you clear a blocked way.
Yeah.
So I ended up there, and while I was there, I decided it was February 22nd, 2022, 2-2-2-2-2. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting at the top of Carlton Hill. And I called my aunt and I said, should I write a book? And she said, sure. And I had a little thing of whiskey that my new friend had given me. I hate whiskey, but I took a shot anyway, practically spat it out, and then was like, dang it, I'm writing a book, and decided there. And then I wrote the majority of this book while I was in that little apartment by myself, kind of on this journey of who the heck am I now?
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to my guest, Devrie Bryn Donaldson, storyteller, speaker, performer, media fast talker, author of You're Gonna Die Alone and other excellent news. She's my guest here today. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're going to take a quick break and come back to continue our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Just close my eyes again. Climbed aboard the Dreamweaver train. Trying to take away my worries of today and leave tomorrow behind.
Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist, and my guest is Devrie Bryn Donaldson, former student, author, and social media maven with close to a million followers. I like Maven.
I like Maven.
You can have it. I gift it to you.
Oh my gosh.
All right. So, but part of your story here, and we were kind of walking up to getting to the point of writing the book, which you were able to do when you returned to Scotland and kind of found the muse inside of you again. But part of what makes your media fast-talking followers so excited is your ability to tell stories that are witty and relatable and authentic and just things that we think and probably don't say out loud. So I'd like you to share the one of the essays that I really liked. Is called Change is Constant, Karen's on a Vespa, and We Need to Get on Board.
Yes.
You have that one?
I do.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay,
all right.
Cool.
Make sure you read it loudly.
I will read it so loudly.
Professor, we can't stop.
Yeah, Professor Barrett, you got it.
Okay.
So, change is constant, Karen's on a Vespa, and we need to get on board. I have suspected for a long time that the biggest secret no one tells you is that you never really feel done. You never really wake up and think, I have nothing left to learn. I know all the answers to all the questions. I'm prepared for any and everything. I am complete. We measure our lives in milestones, counting down the big ones until we're fully grown up, a real adult, probably with a successful relationship, a well-paying job, a house, and if you're a woman, you better have a child or a dang good reason not to. When the milestones run out, though, we're supposed to stop changing, especially if you're a woman. We're not supposed to keep shedding our skins, changing our belief systems and our circumstances and behavior. We're only given the allowance to make small, consumable shifts. How else will people look to you for comfort when they need it? Mothers are supposed to answer the phone in the exact same way every time. There is no event large enough that encourages us to embrace a complete do-over for a woman. Oh, Karen's husband boinked his scuba instructor and bought a sleazy timeshare in Mallorca? Karen must be going through it. Karen should take up pottery, probably. Pottery would be wild. But Karen doesn't get the same support when, after being confronted with the scuba suit-clad siren and dirty love nest, she sells her house and goes to Italy to ride on the back of a 25-year-old Giuseppe's Vespa, does she? Then Karen is crazy, and Karen is out of touch, and Karen has responsibilities she's just abandoning. Karen, it turns out, is a selfish, unhinged bee. Can you believe she just left everyone behind? No timeshare for Karen. That doesn't seem very fair, though, right? I mean, sometimes life just ends up that way for Karen, and Karen didn't even get a say in the home-wrecking mermaid or the bed of lies in Spain. Life can deal you a rancid hand so awful, your only option is to quit playing poker entirely and leave Las Vegas behind you. You have to wake up, decide you're sick of this crap, and end the day straddling a scooter in Tuscany. Sometimes life is like that. Sometimes life is a brand new page and a beautiful boy named Giuseppe. What if women were allowed to do truly wild things? What if we let them dye their hair pink and take up pole dancing at 45 just because they wanted to try on someone new, the way they might try a bright nail polish color after years of wearing neutrals? What would the world look like if we decided not to whisper about the photo of Karen and her hot Giuseppe, and instead rallied behind her with curiosity? Karen, how are you doing? Karen, what are you learning? Karen, how can I support you while you are living a life so unfamiliar? Karen, have you found someone new under all those old layers of you? Karen, is that man as good in bed as he looks? Change is scary, even when we see it in other people. Most of us, myself included, have a knee-jerk reaction to stop it when it comes on too fast and too strong and makes the stable women we know seem unrecognizable. Men have much more room, for much longer, to change. They're allowed to do erratic, spontaneous, and selfish things in pursuit of becoming a man. They're allowed to lure a fish-loving blonde into their fish-loving beds and get rewarded with keynote speaking gigs and stuff. Look at him going after what he wants. We could learn a thing or two from him. But when women change, when they go full Leo on a yacht with a model boyfriend and martinis before noon, we can't cope with that as easily, can we? We are affronted, and our little chests puff up, and we plant our feet to tisk, who is change, to bust into our lives and make our mothers and sisters and aunties suddenly look and sound so different? Who is change to steal from us our comfort and consistency? Change cannot snatch me from the bosom. Aunt Karen looks so embarrassing on her icky rental Vespa. I can't help but wonder, though, what would happen if we embraced the fact that, for women, change is one of the only things we can ever really count on. I like to imagine our bookshelves and movie theaters stocked with stories of gals gone wild, trying on new selves and new lives as often or as rarely as they called to us, and all of them celebrated for their courage. Don't we deserve classic stories of the triumphant, not tragic, ways we always endure what we cannot control? I think specifically of the many ways women have to survive men and their choices. Men who make choices on our behalf. Men who leave, or who lose, or who hurt. So many stories of women as heroes are about them surviving what men hath wrought. And I wonder what it would be like to see a woman who was being heroic on her own terms, because of her own choices. I hope for all of us we have a moment of bravery and abandon like our friend Karen. Whether it be something as visible as an Italian escape, or something as quietly revolutionary as breaking the chain of hurt that's been passed down through your family for as long as anyone can remember, I know that change will find us all at least once. It will kick down our door, snatch the remote from our hand, turn off our 20th rewatch of Fleabag, and demand we answer its question, do you have the courage to come with me? Deciding how we will answer the call of change is something we all have to do for ourselves. It's personal and it's complicated, and there's always a lot to consider. But one of the hardest parts of change is one we should not have to consider. We're often forced to weigh the reactions of a lot of other people. It's a shame, but we are often the hardest part of each other's necessary growth, aren't we? It's so hard to accept, but our loved ones might be ready to change well before we're ready to let them go. And so we stand in the way, holding out our hurt feelings and disbelief, beckoning each other to take them on as a burden to bear. We ask, how could they up and leave? What does that say about them? What does that say about me? As much as I love to encourage the gals to dig deep and follow the wild call of their hearts, I also understand the tender soreness that comes with it. And I know it's not always just the person who is evolving who feels the ache of things stretching and growing suddenly old. It's painful to feel left behind. We are all only human, after all. So consider this an appeal to the abandon in us all, no matter where we're sitting when change comes to town. We may be the door it knocks on, or the loving neighbor, or the kid who thought their mom would be the same forever. Let us be brave enough to embrace change, wise enough to know when it's time, and kind enough to let each other grow when we need to find new soil. Kind enough to accept that sometimes change will take away the women we love and transform them into something new and important. We can decide today, together, that women are allowed to never stop changing if they need to. We can be free to pursue the best version of ourselves, of our life, until the end. After all, Karen's on a Vespa, not checking her phone or seeing any passive-aggressive text messages in her family group chat, and it's really none of their business anyway.
You're listening to my guest, Debbie Brynn Donaldson, reading from her book, You're Gonna Die Alone and Other Excellent News. And that was one of the essays. So the inspiration for this essay.
I think part of it comes from my own life. I think ever since I was little, I was just sort of, I wouldn't say defiant, but insatiable in terms of curiosity. And, you know, I watched Mulan a lot and was convinced I could too save China if it came to that. And I still kind of feel that way,
okay,
you know,
good.
Like
I'm
glad. you gotta back yourself. And it wasn't always a thing that was encouraged when I was growing up. The women in my family were very anxious and worried about safety. And I was climbing trees. Without the other little girls for a lot of that time, and, you know, with my brothers chasing them down. On top of that, I think I have gone through so many versions of myself in pursuit of my overall goal, which has been to add good, right? And so I've shed a lot of skins, and I've seen people react negatively to me while I'm still young. Mm-hmm. And then I watched women that I knew start to change. And what really hammered this home, I think, for me was when my grandmother started to hit that end phase of life, when my grandpa died and suddenly my, you know, 86-year-old grandmother was staring at the house that she lived in for 50 years that was too big and empty and wondering, should I sell this and start over somewhere new? And watching her move into a community where her friends that she knew when she was 20 are living down the hall from her, and they walk down the hall in bare feet and their dogs go running between and their doors are left open and they just walk into this. It's like they're in high school again or in college again, living in this beautiful community. But wow, what a change.
Yeah.
And how much bravery it takes to do that. And even when my grandma was making that decision, she was encountering so much friction from other people who didn't know what was going to happen. And so they assumed the choice was wrong because they couldn't see the
end. Couldn't envision, yeah.
Well, I was looking at her being like, you're, you know, my hero. It's incredible to watch that happen. And I just thought, you know, a lot of times women outlive their husbands and their life changes so radically without this man that they've been with for so long in ways that are a lot of times really positive, but only if they can embrace it. but it's happening at this phase of life where you have so much less energy and you it's at the end and there's not a lot of support and right. you're invisible. You know, women at that age, unless it's for a vote, mm-hmm. you're invisible. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, it riled me yeah. a little bit.
Clearly. Yeah. Well, and I really resonate also with the piece of mothers are expected to be the mm-hmm. same forever, as if we're kind of sitting and waiting at the kitchen table for the kids to mm-hmm. come home to visit. Mm-hmm. And so the house should look the same and the food should be the same and we should be the same mm-hmm. for those visits, however, are not often mm-hmm. or often they occur. That really stuck with me as yeah. well, because that's a tough place to be, because as a mother, you're kind of put in that place of wanting to keep everyone safe and comfortable and whole. So mm-hmm. that in some ways it kind of freezes us
yep.
in that moment.
100%. I think a combination of witnessing other women in my life that were in my mother's cohort, as well as my friends becoming new mothers, watching them struggle to maintain a sense of personhood and individuality mm-hmm. when they put on this new role that was so demanding. Mm-hmm. On top of seeing women that I knew, one of my dearest friends is just turned 60, and her husband, after 15 years, passed away from a horrible battle with a really nasty cancer. Her kids moved out, and there she was with all of her sense of identity kind of up in smoke. Mm-hmm. But still, people weren't okay with her doing something unexpected. Mm-hmm. The reaction was, she's unwell, right. or clearly,
that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Which to me, I was like, what is she supposed to do? Yeah. Sit at the window like a war widow and write Virginia Woolf-esque letters? Like, that would be kind of cool. Virginia Woolf could write. But like, what if she wanted to, you know,
get on a Vespa.
Yeah, get on a Vespa.
My guest today is Devery Brynn Donaldson. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're going through her beautiful book of essays and poetry. And you know, one of the reviews of it talks about it. If you didn't like poetry before, this is going to make you love poetry, and then you're going to hate yourself for loving poetry. And it's a little bit of a theme, because a few weeks ago I had the San Luis Obispo Poet Laureate on, and I've been on this quest of wanting poetry. It's like keeps coming out of me, and I don't know anything about it, and I feel really illiterate about poetry, but this curiosity has gotten to me. So the timeliness of us coming together and reading how accessible what you've written is has been really inspiring to me. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Oh, absolutely. I'd like you to read Little Girls.
Okay.
Because it kind of goes along a little bit with what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And then Closure as well. But we'll start
Fantastic.
Little Girls.
Fantastic. Okay. Little Girls. Of all the reasons it's a shame we force little girls to be mothers, the worst of them all must be mothers who never get to grow up bury their little girl ghosts in the little girl bones of their daughters.
I just have to sit with that one. Because again, that nothing is all good or all bad mm-hmm. in life, right? The beauty of being able to raise children, and I introduce myself as a wife and mother, I feel that so strongly. Mm-hmm. And yet two things are this true at the same time, mm-hmm. that I absolutely adore that role of motherhood, most meaningful part of my life, and yet it can feel really restrictive mm-hmm. at times when I want to be bad. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that's the right word. If I want to, yeah, step out of that a bit. And yeah. fortunately, I have a family system that supports that. They'll roll their eyes mm-hmm. and like, oh, mom, mm-hmm. really? Okay. But the door is still open. Mm-hmm. But I know so many of the women that I've grown up with and known throughout my life who have buried their lost dreams into their daughters. And that's tough to see, but also mm-hmm. felt like they had their dreams buried by their own mothers mm-hmm. right before they even became mothers. And so I mean, yeah. that linealness of the generational things that get passed along within it are tough choices and tough decisions that need to be made. And I don't even know if there's an answer to it, to be honest, because I don't know if, you know, abandoning motherhood is the answer.
Right.
I don't want to give up both worlds. But how can the two be true at the same time?
Yeah.
How about Closure?
Closure.
We're just going through Devery's book. I would love her to just read the whole thing, but then you'd have nothing to look forward to when you go to buy her
go
book.
Buy it, people. I'm just kidding. Closure. When I decided I'd write, I knew I'd have to step into old rooms where all of you have spent the night. I thought I might end up talking to your ghosts for too long, or moving back in, or painting I miss you in the dust with my fingertip and waiting for your reply. And I know we don't talk anymore, but can I tell you one last thing? I typed the final line, and then I just walked out and closed the door behind me. I poured myself a glass of water, and I listened to the birds outside, and I wondered if it might rain this week.
And that came from?
Writing this book was a choice that I knew could be the period or the last page of some chapters or relationships in my life that I was sort of desperate to keep open. So it was a combination of accepting that if I did this work and honored what I think is the responsibility of somebody who can claim the title of professional storyteller, mm-hmm. which is to add the good that you can and to pass the baton and to offer and synthesize your pain into something kind. I knew that if I did that, there was a chance that the people that I hoped would find me again would choose not to, because it would feel like an exposure, mm-hmm. although there's no way for anybody but them to know. So it was a combination of that and the fact that, you know, I plumbed the depths for this. There's sort of an arc in this book in terms of theme, but it jumps all over in terms of moments in my life. It opens when I was a child and I was being haunted by a Furby. It goes all the way up to the moment I was writing it. And so I knew that, you know, when you think of your life as sort of this like really long hallway with a lot of doors, there were a lot of doors that I had closed or locked or hammered a lot of boards over and said never, ever, ever. And I knew that in order to kind of find these things to share, I'd have to go back into those rooms. Mm-hmm. And that in those rooms were ghosts, you know, and most of us, our hearts are in some way a haunted house. Mm-hmm. And learning to live with the sounds at night or the things that cry and wail and those things, to be kind to those things, is part of living. So that was the birth of that little guy.
I love that. So this book also has a lot of humor in it. The story about your crush, and I can't remember if you're 12 years old.
Oh my God,
and,
yeah.
And the story of getting your first Walkman. And
he was so cute.
Okay, that essay is worth the book in itself. And I read it again last night. It's just such a great capturing of what it's like to be 12.
So, yeah.
And to be fine, and also the description of what you're wearing. I just loved it so much. So there is such a great blending of kind of the heavy heart mm-hmm. piece, but also your ability to tap into just the sheer nutty, complex beauty of being an adolescent or mm-hmm. a young woman in her 20s, and the heart throbbing of love and having it just, you know, flitter away. Yep. It's phenomenal.
Thank
so
you.
What's up next for you in our last couple minutes here?
Yeah.
Where does the journey take you?
Yeah. So this was my first nonfiction book, my first novel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can call myself a novelist now. Another little jewel in my crown. Nobody can see it but me, but I sparkle it every day. My first novel comes out in December of 2025, so this year.
This year,
and it is purely fictional, but inspired by my flight to Scotland. And I describe it as a story about sort of the way that we learn how we deserve to be loved and what happens when we pursue that and the courage that it takes to realize that maybe the way that we've been loved our whole life isn't what we deserve and to choose something better. Mm. And it, much like this book, I would describe as humor on the nose, heart on the finish.
Okay.
I like to make you giggle, 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 and then kind of like gut punch you with a little, oh my God, it's me on paper and I need to go to therapy in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. So that's coming out next. And you can find me on social media, on Instagram, on TikTok, however long that may last. And my website is devrywrites.com. And on social media, it's Devry Brin.
And that's Devrie.
Yeah, Devrie. like Victoria, RIEBRYNN, or devryrights.com.
And where are you with your juggling of two worlds right now?
Oh my gosh. Right now, it's been quite difficult. My last year was a really rough year. And trying to show up every day mm-hmm. and be observed and offer something to the world, I fell off of that. I almost took a year break from social media without realizing that it had been a year. Mm-hmm. But I was also coping with a lot of things that demanded things. And at the same time, I was working on the book. So I've done better. I've done worse. I'll do better. I'll do worse. Life is long, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think the break, I will say this. In juggling so many worlds, I am grateful for the cost, because what it brings into my life, control and freedom and community, the people that I've met via these things, the connections that I made, are worth the cost over and over and over again. And at the end of the day, I'm just grateful for every single person who supports or interacts or finds something that they can use in their life. And that's that.
I love it. Devry Brynn Donaldson, thank you for being my guest today. Thank you for being a former student and making me so proud.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. My favorite professor. This is a full circle moment.
Oh, thank you. You can find us on Facebook, on Instagram. You can podcast the show, share it with your friends. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. But as always, I thank you for tuning in, listening, and supporting this community. Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Open up the dirty window, let the sun illuminate.